The LCC Subcommittee on Redistricting will come to order. This is our first meeting of this round. The duties of this subcommittee are pretty much technical in nature. This is not the group that historically has done redistricting. It's House and Senate usually set up a separate process for that purpose. What this group does is try to make sure that we are technically in a position to do redistricting. This group works on a, historically, has worked on a consensus basis. We just want to make sure that all the caucuses and feel they have appropriate staff, technology, et cetera, to do the job that has to be done. The LCC passed a resolution. There are two things to notice here. One is a statute that describes the necessities for plans. Mr. Watson, why don't you just briefly describe what the constitutional and statutory provisions are related to redistricting?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Peter Watson, Senate Counsel. Minnesota Statute 2.91 gives to the LCC the responsibility of keeping records of whatever the legislature does in the way of enacting a legislative or a congressional redistricting plan. And then those records get turned over to the Secretary of State, who then in turn provides them to local governments to actually run the elections. And the reason why this has been given to the LCC is because over the years, at least since the 1980s, the LCC has been responsible for creating the computer system that enabled the caucuses to draw plans. And so it has been the repository of the plan information and has been providing it to others. The primary method of providing that information nowadays, at least in the last 10 years, has been simply by posting it on the web. That the information is public and anybody can download it. But this began at a time when the transfer of information was by taking a computer disk or a tape and giving it to the Secretary of State.
So are you suggesting we need to consider some updating of the statute, or is it?
No.
Okay. And then the Constitution, we should just review quickly the current constitutional responsibility for redistricting.
Mr. Chairman, the Constitution gives the responsibility for drawing both legislative and congressional plans to the legislature. And it says that at the first session of the legislature, following each census of the United States conducted by the United States, the legislature shall redraw the boundaries of the districts.
Okay. And then the charge to the subcommittee is on the back of, there was a resolution passed by the LCC, I presume last year sometime. I actually don't remember doing it.
Mr. Chairman, it says on the bottom, February 23rd of 2009.
Okay, and that's on the back of the sheet that has the names. And Mr. Watson, why don't you just go through that briefly, please?
Mr. Chairman, the resolution from this decade is essentially the same as the resolution for the previous decade, noting that the LCC has this responsibility for keeping track of plans and providing them to the Secretary of State and delegating then their responsibility to a subcommittee, a four-person subcommittee, one member from each caucus, there to get their work done between now and January 1 of 2011, which is about the time we'll be getting the new census counts based on the 2010 census. They're supposed to elect a chair, as you can see just before the paragraph numbered 3, elect officers who serve until January 1, 2011, and the chair must be a member of the Senate.
And when Mr. Watson pointed that out to me the other day, I said, why is that? And he said, well, I guess that's what the resolution said last decade. So my apologies to the House for that.
Well, Mr. Chair, At this time, is it appropriate to entertain nominations for chair? In that case, I nominate you, Mr. Chair, permanent Mr. Chair, to be the, or temporary Mr. Chair, to be the permanent Mr. Chair. So I nominate Senator Pogamiller.
Any other nominations? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Thank you. Senator Gerlach, before you came in, this group works on a consensus basis. This is not the group that does redistricting. The House and the Senate set up committees or do it through the Rules Committee, depending on what they choose to do. Mm-hmm. What this group tries to do on a consensus basis is make sure that the technology and the staffing is in place to do that job. So, and my intent would be to work by consensus, mm-hmm. and that should be fairly easy. Then I think the next thing to look at would be the timetable draft based on, and there's no decision to be made here, this is just to kind of give a sense of what has happened in the past, and at some point we may want to adopt a timetable, but right now there's no need to. And so just looking at that timetable, Mr. Watson, why don't you just point out kind of the key features of that, and maybe describe what tasks we may want to consider performing now versus later.
Mr. Chairman, we're right in the middle of this timetable. If you look at January 1, 2010, that's when precinct boundaries will be frozen. And if you look at what's happened before now, you'll see starting at the top of the page, we had census phases 1 and 2. The phase 1 was in 2004 to 2006, where the census gathered from all 50 states the boundaries of their legislative districts and then digitized them, put them into the official census geographic file. Then in July of 2005, the state leaders designated their census liaisons for that phase one, and those people would have been people like the state demographer Tom Gillespie and the director of the GIS operations in the LCC, Lee Mellier.
And we should, maybe this would be an appropriate time to just introduce some of the people who are currently here. I want to make clear, this legislature this decade can do whatever it wants. Mm-hmm. So if people aren't happy with what is in place, we would make a recommendation to change that. If we are happy with what's in place, we would obviously recommend to keep proceeding and so forth. But I want to make it real clear that this legislature can decide to do anything it wants, differently or insane. But currently we have in place, Mr. Watson has worked on it in the Senate as Senate counsel.
I'm Matt Gehring from House Research.
Okay, and you've been assigned, apparently. Welcome. State demographer, why don't you introduce yourself?
Tom Gillespie.
Lee Mellier. And why don't you describe who you are and what you do?
Lee Mellier, I'm the manager of the GIS office.
I'm Troy Lawrence, I'm a GIS analyst, also involved 10 years ago.
And why don't you just describe a little bit what you've been doing in the interim between the last redistricting and now? You've been used by committees and so forth. Plus, why don't you grab a mic and just describe a little bit, Lee, what you've been up to? And
I'm Lee Mellier of the LCC. Basically, I oversee all the IT responsibilities of the LCC. With redistricting, most recently we were involved in the block boundary suggestion program, which suggests block boundaries for the Census Bureau.
We're the local feedback to the Federals
right.
as to
right.
And you've done mapping for, in the interim here between the redistricting, you've done mapping for the LCMR and others, right?
Right. We do mapping and analysis for bills and whatnot.
Well, members may know this, but all these big, I don't don't know what size those maps are that are colored and stuff, they come out of their office. And this is a nonpartisan operation in the LCC. The hires of these people were all, I had nothing to do with it, the caucuses had nothing to do with it, they were hired by the LCC a decade ago. These two gentlemen have been with us for a decade, and they were nonpartisan hires that the caucuses had nothing to do with. So they're technical, professional people. Am I wrong about that?
Ms. Chairman, as I recall, Mr. Mellier has been here since, 98 or so, 97?
96.
Since 1996. And I believe at the time he was hired, it was the four members of the GIS subcommittee, the redistricting subcommittee, who did the interviews and made the decision.
Correct. Was I on the subcommittee then?
Yes.
So,
welcome.
So the members of this subcommittee, who was on that subcommittee that in those days?
Says it was.
Would that have still been Peter Radosovich on the House side, or maybe he was gone by then?
It was Myra Norfield.
Oh, man. I totally forgot that. Okay.
And Ron Abrams.
Abrams.
Senate. Would have been Belanger?
Storm, maybe? Don Storm?
No, that would have been after Storm, I think.
Oh, that must have been Kleiss?
Belanger or Kleiss?
It was Dave Kleiss, yes.
Dave Kleiss, okay. So it was this group. So in that sense, we were involved. Okay. Did we do the interviews and stuff? I don't recall that.
Well, Ms. Chairman, you had staff interviews, and then we got down to a limited number of people. It may have been three or four or five people that we interviewed. Greg might remember.
Yeah. I was just going to add that during the last redistricting process, there was actually a commission on redistricting that was established separately in law. That was repealed in 2003 or so. So the office now exists entirely internally within the LCC. Yeah. So if there were a vacancy, again, it would be likely that the director would hire the staff rather than having the commission or the subcommittee do that.
I see. Okay. Well, the only point I brought that up is that these are professional people, not partisan people. So. Okay, then. Mr. Watson, continue then on the time frame. Thank you, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Bell, you just mentioned the phase two. In addition to suggesting block boundaries, they also provided to the Census Bureau our voting districts, our precinct boundaries as of that time. And we've tried to keep the file up to date by capturing the precinct boundaries used for each election, the state primary and the general election every 2 years. So we've got a history in the system that goes back into the 90s. It may go back as far as 1992 or maybe even 1990. So those are provided to the Census Bureau. The July 2008 meeting in New Orleans was significant for NCSL, and that's the time that they got together and figured out, well, what are we going to do to assist the legislatures in their redistricting efforts related to the 2010 census, and they came up with a set of publications that they were going to produce and began talking about a series of seminars that they were going to sponsor. The first of those publications, the case summaries from the 2000s, was published in about November of 2008. The budget for 2009 is what was enacted by the legislature by the end of May. And we'll be getting into that in a minute. Mr. Hubinger can tell you more about what was adopted at that time. The Census Bureau and NCSL have been conducting workshops. Most recently, NCSL had a national redistricting seminar in Chicago in October, where about 200 people, legislators and staff and technical people, got together to talk about the process and the law and the technology to be used in redistricting in 2011. The Redistricting Law 2010 publication just came out last month. There are a limited number of paper copies around, and it's published on the web. Likewise, the state profiles, it just shows for each state who is responsible for redistricting, what are their governing constitutional and statutory provisions, How many members do they have in their upper house, their lower house? How many congressional people? Who is likely to be doing the drafting of plans? Will it be a commission? Will it be a committee, subcommittee, whatever? At any rate, the latest information about the 50 states is now published. And 10 years ago and 20 years ago, the Profiles was a paper publication. This year, it's only on the web. But if you were to go to the Minnesota redistricting website that Mr. Melier maintains, there are links to all of those publications. As I said, starting the first of the year, the precinct boundaries are going to be frozen. The cities are not permitted to be changing their boundaries during this time so that the Census Bureau can get the most up-to-date boundaries and keep them and have them there so that when they count the population, they can report the population by precinct. They're in the process of gathering the current city boundaries because the census, which is going to be taken on April 1st, is based on the city boundaries as of the 1st of January. They don't attempt to keep track of nationwide annexations that go on in the first 3 months of the year. They say, what were the boundaries on January 1? Those are the boundaries we are going to assign population to when we count people.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Watson, I have a question about when are the precinct boundaries unfrozen? When may municipalities then start changing again?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, as soon as the legislature has adopted legislative and congressional plans, then the cities are free to change their precinct boundaries, and they are mandated to adjust their precinct boundaries so that no congressional district and no legislative district falls in more than one precinct. If we've split a precinct in the plan, they have to move their boundaries to eliminate that split.
So, Mr. Chair, just to make sure, Mr. Watson, so then for all practical purposes, they are frozen for the duration of the 2010 cycle. So as of January 1st this year, no city, no municipality may change them because we're obviously not going to be enacting this until sometime in late 2011 or early 2012.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Steinemann, that is correct with an exception. Where there is an annexation, the city is required to then divide the precinct so that there is a new precinct. They moved some territory out. There'd be a new little sort of a half precinct in that area that has been annexed. So the people get to vote, but there is a record then kept of who is on that boundary that's outside. So we can go back and then make adjustments to things when we're trying to get what's the total city population.
Got it. Thanks.
It's then talks about Census Day, April 1, and there is in the bottom of your papers a copy of the census form. You'll be hearing lots more about that. It's just the first page. It shows 10 questions, 10 minutes to fill it out. summer and fall of 2010 is the time for purchasing the hardware and getting the software installed, getting the system up and running so that we are ready to be receiving the new geography and the new population counts. With the election, then we'll know who's going to be in charge of redistricting, who's going to be the governor, who's going to be controlling the House and the Senate. Population reported to the states, December 31 is the deadline for reporting the total state population, and that's when we will know whether we are going to lose a congressional seat or not. Based on the Census Bureau estimates from July 8, we were losing a congressional seat. The Census Bureau will be coming out with their 09 estimates next Monday or Tuesday. And so there will be traffic on the web and in the newspapers about whether Minnesota now looks like it will keep or still looks like it will lose that 8th congressional seat. Look for news stories at the end of the day on Monday or Tuesday. We'll get the population counts, the detail down to the block level, sometime before April 1st. And last year we got them on, so it was early, maybe March 29th or something. Not a lot before April 1st. It's about that same time, a little bit earlier, maybe January, that we'll be getting the redistricting geography. We'll have back from the Census Bureau those files that include the January 1 city boundaries and the latest boundaries from the election. We'll have to add our own November 2010 precinct boundaries to that and then allocate the population to those new boundaries. The deadline for the legislature to finish legislative and congressional redistricting is 25 weeks before the state primary. If the state primary is in September, that's going to be March 20th. If the state primary gets moved a month earlier to August, then that date is going to automatically, without any further adjustment, move about a month earlier. So we might be talking about something around February 20th. Give or take a week. May 6th is the constitutional deadline for candidates to establish their residency in a legislative district. It's 6 months before the general election. That's not going to change depending on when the primary is. That's going to remain May 6th. The candidate filing deadline of July 17th is so many weeks 8 weeks, I think it is, before the state primary. So again, if the primary moves so that it's a month earlier, that filing deadline is going to be somewhere around June 17th. And of course, if the primary is moved into June, it will be even that much earlier. The general election will be November 6th. So that's where we are, and what looks like it is store for us over the next little more than year and a half.
Questions on that? Okay. Then let's talk a little bit about the budget in previous decades. And I think, just to give you a heads up, I think there's going to be a recommendation by the staff that we consider purchasing software now. At about, I think it's $35,000, rather than waiting till next year. It's a little cheaper to do it now. So that's kind of where this discussion is going to happen.
Mr. Chairman, the first document labeled draft as the LCC's redistricting budget, it says revised 12/15. That's just a few days ago. And this revision is prepared by staff. And maybe Mr. Hubinger should come up now to the witness table and tell us how this all fits together. The first part of it, down through the subtotal for the LCC GIS office, was essentially what's been adopted last year as part of the regular budget. And the part down below, the House and Senate portion, as I understand it, there was no money included in the LCC budget to take care of these House and Senate needs. So whatever is spent for that below the middle stuff, the hardware and software for the four caucuses, is going to need to come out of the House and Senate budgets. But before Mr. Hubinger gets into this immediate information, let me just point out the historical information that the chair referred to. The first bit, which starts on the back of that first page, is a memorandum from Mr. Mellier to the subcommittee from 11 years ago enclosing the draft budget. And you'll see over the next three or four pages the budget. On the second of those pages, you'll see that the grand total for the previous biennium was about $656,000 for this effort. Everybody see that? Mm-hmm. $300,000 or $400,000 a year was what it cost 10 years ago. And then the next page is a detail of the hardware and software that would be on any one of the four caucus workstations. Then on the back of that document, you'll see the first page of a subcommittee budget from December 14th of 1990. This is reflecting spending that had occurred up to that point, just before we were going to be getting population counts and start to draw. And you'll see the kinds of expenses that were incurred there. And if you turn a couple more pages to page 3 of that document, you'll see that the total budget for the effort in the 1990s was $1 million, and it looked like we were going to come pretty darn close to spending all of that million. So 20 years ago, it was $1 million. 10 years ago, it was $656,000. And this time, we're looking at a little less than $250,000 to do the same job. What's happening is the cost of developing the database has gone down because the digitizing of Minnesota's geography, which Minnesota started back in actually 1980. We spent a lot of money to do that on ourselves. We continued it in the 1990s to kind of finish the job. That's been done, and the Census Bureau has taken over and tried to update that information. So that very large cost is largely gone. And the cost of the hardware to do these jobs has fallen considerably, as you can see by taking a look. And even the cost of the software is now probably less than it was 10 and 20 years ago. So costs are going down, but we still do have this $250,000 expense. I should say one other thing about expenses. The cost of doing redistricting is both the costs that are incurred by the LCC and the costs that are incurred in court. Because if the legislature fails to do its job and enact a constitutional redistricting plan for either the legislature or Congress, then the courts have to get involved and do it. And when they do it, they hire the necessary staff, they buy the hardware and software, they develop whatever database they want to use, they draw the plans, they have attorneys come in and argue about it, and then they send the bill to the legislature. And we write an appropriation to the Secretary of State, which 20 years ago was, I don't know, $500,000 or something. And 10 years ago, it was $369,000. Their costs are kept down somewhat in that both in the 1990s and the 2000s, they used our legislative system to draw their plans. They just brought a workstation and used our software, downloaded information from our website. They did it just like any of the caucuses would do. So the primary expenses 10 years ago were $369,000 for attorney's fees that we had to pay. Now, Mr. Hubinger, can they maybe get us back to the present and where we are now today and the decisions for today.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I was going to be speaking from the draft budget for fiscal years 10 and 11. It's a one-page sheet centered on the top of the word draft. This is a draft proposed budget developed by the staff for your consideration. The top half represents costs that will be absorbed by the LCC for the GIS office, and the bottom half under House and Senate are costs that would be absorbed by the House and Senate. In the past, as Mr. Watson mentioned, there have been appropriations to pay for these costs for the legislature for this biennium because of the constraints there were not, and so we all were understanding as we went through the appropriations process during the 09 session that these would be costs that would have to be absorbed. The GIS office expenses are basically are similar to those that the House and Senate will face in terms of paying for maintenance costs for the software, supplies, and hardware. They're similar to what the each of the caucuses will need to invest in somewhat later. The bottom half are those costs that we anticipate for the four caucuses. We're suggesting that the House, Senate, and LCC purchase the software now in this fiscal year, actually this calendar year, because of lower costs per license for renewing the licenses that we actually used 10 years ago. They're about 30% less than if we were to wait or if we were to purchase new software licenses next year. be about $40,000 total between the LCC, the House, and the Senate, $35,000 for the House and Senate to divide. We show the cost of workstations at about $3,500, substantially less than 10 and 20 years ago. The plotters are the large format plotters that can produce maps that are 4 feet by
4 foot wide,
Which are helpful in looking at details of maps.
Sarah Gerlach. Thank you, Mr. Ebinger. I realize you do a lot of output. You print a lot of things. Is it necessary to have four? Are they running all the time? Or why would there? Because these are really expensive items. The plotter is a very expensive item. Is it necessary to have four?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, the caucuses will be basically doing their work at the same time. And they usually end up doing crunch time and end up printing at exactly the same time to meet deadlines. And so it'd be difficult to share.
So you pretty much designate one per caucus?
Yes, exactly.
How that works, and then you've always got yours freed up, so you don't have to wait.
Locationally, I think here's the key point. Locationally, they are in separate locations.
Yes. I see. I was assuming they're one place. Yep. I see. I get it.
Our office will have one, and so our staff will be able to provide technical support to the caucuses if necessary. But
Senator Fulgham, fours. This is why everything is in fours.
Yeah.
Right. Historically, and we don't have to do it this way this time. But historically, each caucus has had their own space office where they do their own workstation, their own mapping, and that then accommodates their need for public or private or whatever they're doing. So others can't see until somebody chooses to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, in addition, we provide for smaller printers for letter size or legal size maps, and then a placeholder for additional software that might be necessary in terms of writing reports for the caucuses. We provide some options in terms of a larger printer, 24-inch, for printing somewhat larger maps that would be less expensive. And we found 10 years ago that projecting proposed maps in privacy in the caucuses was helpful, and so we provide for a projector of about $800. We also indicate a placeholder for training for the members. This usually comes in one of two forms. One is to attend NCSL conferences, so you are presented with information about policy issues related to redistricting. And then we also have in the past brought the software provider Maptitude, which we've used in the past as the software for redistricting. We've brought that vendor in to Minnesota to provide training for members and their caucus staff. So they're able to operate it efficiently. This budget does not provide for any staffing. It's assumed that would have to be absorbed by the LCC and then the House and the Senate for their caucus staff. Glad to answer any questions.
So just to clarify, everything, that subtotal number, the 68 and the 30, are already in the House and Senate budgets, or the LCC budget. That was adopted into law, so that we don't need to worry about any of that unless somebody decides to come in and make some cuts in those areas this legislative cycle, which the committees may, I don't know. I don't know if the finance committees will think about that. But below then, no decision has to be made on any of that right now except for a suggestion that it is less expensive if we spend that $35,333 right now to upgrade our software, that will be less expensive for us to do it now rather than later. And there are apparently two vendors in this area that are viable. We have been using Maptitude for how many, one decade or two decades now? One? This will be the second decade. And the staff, as I understand it, the staff recommendation is to stay with Maptitude. It's technology is as good as the other, if not better. I don't know how you'd want to describe that. Do you want to make a description of that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, could I give a little history?
Okay.
The LCC in the state of Minnesota put a lot of effort into an RFP for redistricting software in the 1980s. and we worked very diligently to digitize the entire state in the 1980s. And we had a computerized redistricting plan, and we had a mapping capability that, frankly, wasn't very good. But we may have been the first state in the country that had the entire state digitized. In the 1990s, the person who had been the lead for that effort in the 1980s at, I forget what its name was then, it was later the Land Management Information Center, went to work for a company called ESRI in California, and they got into the redistricting business. And we worked with ESRI in the 1990s to develop redistricting software. ESRI's software now is being marketed by Citygate. So that's our 1990 version. In the 2000s, the subcommittee chose to move from ESRI to Maptitude, primarily because it was a lot faster, and worked with Maptitude during the 2000s to improve their software. So what you have is a situation of our two former vendors that we both helped get started in this area competing with each other. And we're just inclined to stay with the more recent of those.
Mr. Watson, if you could just update it. So you had an RFP that was put out for this submission, what is being recommended right now. The RFP was put out when?
We have not done a new RFP this decade. And did we do an RFP 10 years ago?
I don't believe that we did.
Oh, I think we just evaluated the software. Yeah, we just evaluated the software and decided to make the change sometime in advance of 2000. So our last RFP would have been the RFP that we did at the end of the 1980s. Let's call it 1989. That resulted in our contract with ESRI to develop that software.
Mr. Watson, just being completely ignorant of redistricting software, I have no idea of how many vendors there are, what the complexity or nimbleness or speed is of these systems. Has the NCSL produced anything from their recommendations or their meetings that says there's 50 vendors that do this, or five, or two, or and are we really aware of the state of the art in terms of software, or are we recommending what we recommended before because we're trained in on it and we know it and we like it and those kinds of things?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, what I know from NCSL surveys and from the national meetings that they had in October in Chicago and in June in San Francisco is that there are remaining now really only two vendors. If you're looking for competition and new ideas, the newest battlefield will be redistricting on the web, with both of those two vendors working to produce a web redistricting application, where if you buy that, then you put that out on the web and you may spend $50,000 for your web application. Then anybody in the world can draw maps on your web application. Both of these two vendors are working on that, and there are other groups who are working to provide that, and there may be something by 2011 that will make that possible. The state of Florida is working on a web application, and Texas, I think, is working on a web application. We may know about some others. So that's sort of the state of the art. No, I wouldn't say it's a matter of just comfort, although that's part of it. The breakdown between the two vendors, I am not sure. I tried to actually get that information yesterday, and it was not available. but I will continue to try to get that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the draft budget under maintenance, it says ESRI, maintenance for ArcGIS mapping software. Mr. Watson, you just mentioned that you use Maptitude to replace ESRI. So what is that about? Maintenance for a system that was replaced by Maptitude? Or are you still using it, or how does that work?
Again, Mr. Miller can talk more about this, but my understanding is that for many mapping applications, ESRI works better, and one of the things that it works better for is publishing the maps on the web and doing the run of multiple maps.
Okay. So then this project involves multiple software applications that do different things better than others, and then you're going to use these different components for the whole. So that's why you still have ESRI. You have Maptitude, it sounds like, is doing the bulk of the work, the number crunching probably.
Yeah, for developing the plans. Yeah.
For developing the plans. So you have ESRI, which it works with the ArcGIS, so the mapping software. There's another item here under consultants. It says redistricting app 5000. It says assistance with in-house developed web-based redistricting application. How does that fit in?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, As Peter just mentioned, the ESRI software is really good at producing reports that are published to the web. One downside of that is that they're static reports. And so what Mr. Miller has been doing in his spare time is working on an application that would have that data be live so that it could be manipulated. We're not sure if that will be ready for the redistricting process, but that's being worked on. If we get close, we'll consider bringing in and if necessary, bring in an outsider to help finish that software.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Gerlach, another kind of software that Mr. Miller is working with is open source software. And in I think it's probably the next document in this stack, the description of the system, he mentions some of that open source software that is being used also to post plans to the web and to produce maps. That is another area of future development, open source and doing things on the web. It's not necessarily all there right now, and some of it will be available for 2011 and some might be really good by 2013.
I think, would it be fair to say the general philosophy in Minnesota has been to provide as much information to as many people as possible in as usable a form as possible over the years? And with technology advancing as much as it has, we probably should anticipate a lot of participation in drawing maps this year from all kinds of people. And you may have outside groups buying their own software in Minnesota to help us.
The participation will be unprecedented.
Yes, and I think you may have people on their Blackberries and on their iPhones drawing individual maps for their own individual districts. I think that's a likelihood this session, or this round. So it won't be lack of information. The issue will be a much broader one in terms of just managing the process to get a map. There'll be all kinds of maps. I think that's a fair assessment technologically. That's what you hear nationally from people and from technology people. Just this cost dropping this dramatically is. So I think that's a good thing. It'll be interesting to manage. So the staff recommendation is for us to recommend to leadership, because this would come out of the basic House incentive budgets as they are.
Right.
I have talked with the speaker. She feels that probably this money is available in the House. If it isn't, then obviously it doesn't happen. But this would basically be how many? 8 sets of hardware, of software? And the 8 sets go where?
Mr. Chairman, our precedent from 10 years ago is you've got roughly one staff person who is the hands-on drawing maps person, and that person needs a workstation and the software. And then the four members of the subcommittee, or
that's
people like
caucus.
Them,
one in each
caucus, or people like them, will want the software to be doing stuff on their own hardware. And the hardware requirements have sort of stayed the same for 10 years as the hardware capability has gone way up. So what was a high-end PC 10 years ago is a low-end PC today. So any of the four of you who has a laptop or a desktop, probably that's enough power to do this redistricting application, so you just need the software. But if you're going to hire an additional person to do the redistricting operation, then they're going to need the hardware also. So that's where the numbers come from.
So it's basically two sets of software for each caucus.
Right.
And it is true, last decade I had it on a laptop, and we had a little key thing that we put in to make it work.
A hardware block is what it was.
A hardware block. So whoever the member is in your caucus that has access to that software, you will literally be walking around with it. So, and then obviously a staff person in the caucus would be in some location with however your caucus chooses to do it. Now, I should say the Senate did pass this bill to create a commission of judges. You would, I believe, even if that became law, I don't know that it will, but even if that became law, we would do this, because I believe the caucuses will want to participate under any circumstance and draw maps, and they'll either be doing it for the legislative process or as a submission to somebody else. So in that sense, this is, it appears, this would be something that we would do under any circumstance or want to do. Because at the end of the day, the Constitution requires that we get this job done.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask the rationale for the discount, the 30% discount, saying if you do it now versus later, what is the vendor saying about what is the rationale for that? I mean, why are they saying it's, I mean, 30% is a significant discount. But what does a few months matter?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach, the software that we bought in whenever it was, 98 for the first time, was $500 a copy. And the vendor put in a price structure that said for maintenance, you just pay $500 a year and you maintain your license. And over the last 10 years, and looking at what is going to be their price structure for this decade, they have said through the end of this year, next couple of weeks, the price will remain at $500 a year. So if you have an old license, like we have these eight or a dozen licenses that go back to 2001 and 2002, if you've got those old licenses, you just pay your back maintenance and you're up to date.
And
you can pay your maintenance forward for the next 2 years at $500 a year, and then you're set through this redistricting effort. But if you do not make that decision by the end of this year and you make it in January 1 and thereafter, the cost is $750 per year to renew your old license or to start forward. If you were a brand new user starting out, didn't have a license, then the cost would be
$7,500.
So, 10 years worth of.
So there's a number of years where it wasn't used. Essentially, it was on the shelf and dormant. But they're picking that up one way or another. Whether
correct.
It's a new license where you want to count it as back.
Correct.
It's just they need to make their money, and they're offering this as essentially a marketing tool.
Yes.
To make us make a decision.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, we're going to do it. It sounds like we're going to do it anyway. 30% savings over a few months is kind of a no-brainer. That's if it was 5% or something, but 30% is pretty significant.
I mean, frankly, the reason why this meeting got called now is based on that staff recommendation, seeing that, gee, that kind of made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So would you like to move that? I think it would be, I think Mr. Watson says a recommendation to the leadership.
Okay.
And so,
yeah,
Senator Gerlach moves that the subcommittee recommend to the leadership that we do make this software purchase eight renewals of the licenses at this time, split between the House and the Senate. And that what that will set in motion is we will just internally say, okay, do we have that money, and we'll just do it. And the Speaker, based on the conversation I had with her, she said they thought they had that. And this is one-time money, so.
And Mr. Chairman, since Maptitude, we're also making that decision to continue on, obviously, with that particular vendor as suggested by the staff. So.
And the staff seems comfortable with that. It's a good software.
Okay.
I don't think, can you imagine any downside to making the choice to Maptitude now? Is there something that we might be missing here that we'll wish we waited and chose somebody else next year?
The possibilities that are out there for doing it a different way are the open source, sort of draw your own. Mr. Mellier could draw his own software, or working with a state like Florida or Texas or any of the others who are working on their own software that they're going to propagate to the web and make it available. There's a possibility of saving money by going that route. But what we don't know is whether it will work and whether it will work in time and whether it will work better than what we know already is working. We just don't know. There's this other possibility announced in Chicago. One group said that we just got a $200,000 grant from a foundation to develop this web redistricting application. And so we hope that by 2011, we will have this online application that anyone anywhere in the country can use. Free redistricting for everybody. Well, again, we don't know whether that will work, whether it will work in time, and whether it will work better than what we would be paying this money for. So that's the risk, that we would discover that later on somebody has something free out there that works just as well.
Mr. Chairman, a little over a year ago, I participated on the subcommittee with Senator Betzel, chaired it on the technology mm-hmm. issues and with the voting board and such. And the challenge was, with such a specialized use as legislatures, the marketplace isn't what we would like it to be. We would like there to be 50 vendors all competing for our business. The reality is, I think there was, you know, one or two, right. Maybe even one, I think is what it really, it's the only people that do it. And so you're a little over a barrel on that just because there's such a limited marketplace for it. And there's a pretty limited market for something like this, too. So I think if the staff is good with it and it's done the job, I think what Mr. Watson's saying is probably true. You know, there's a high risk here, maybe Pennywise Pound Foolish, but it seems to make sense to me.
So we have the Gerlach motion before us. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then we... I think we wanted to point out that there's a document in here. Mr. Watson, what is this longer document?
Mr. Chairman, the longer document is a description
thank you.
Of our computerized redistricting system, and you'll see that the underlying date is from February of 2001. That shows the system that was in place and was used 10 years ago to draw plans. It shows with strikeout and underlining changes to that system to bring it up to date as of a few days ago. And it reflects discussions that we as the staff group, I and Mr. Gehring, Mr. Gillespie, Mr. Mellier, Mr. Lawrence, Brad Neuhauser from the Secretary of State's office, where we are in trying to bring that system up to date. That history, some of which I recited to you a moment ago, is on the first page. And then on the second page, you take a look at the workstations at the bottom of the page, whereas we had a really top-of-the-line, highest-performance PC of a Pentium 3
with a speed of
at least 1 gigahertz and at least a gigabyte of RAM. Wow! Those were, what, $7,000 machines? So we tried to update this, and Mr. Melier has pointed out that this really isn't the highest performance. Even if we go to 4 gigahertz and 4 gigabytes, this is the low end. It's not the high end. So it's just an ordinary PC. We move away from a tape drive to an external hard drive and move away from that huge 21-inch monitor. I think the standard issue monitor in the Senate is now 22 inches. We're not sure exactly what size monitor.
So the point here is though this is a document for review by your staffs and whoever you want to consult with to just see what should this look like, and we'll take this up before we make purchases of hardware next year. Yeah. We'll discuss that.
And Mr. Chairman, after this first couple of pages is about the hardware, and then we get into the database to show changes in the database, mainly reflecting changes in the way the Census Bureau has brought its files up to date. There will be further updates to that as we get into examining the census file. And then in the last several pages is a description of how the software works. Starting on page 12 is a description of how the software works and what it does. And I don't expect there will be a lot of change to that either. This is actually relatively close, I think, to where we're going to end up a year from now. But take a look at it. That'll show you where we were and about where we are now and probably where we're going to be a year from now. I think you all do want to be prepared for our plans about a year from now.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, when do you anticipate that this group will next need to meet?
Well, I was just going to suggest that members should look through the materials, talk with people who might know something about what has happened in the past, and then I am very open to whenever we want to get back together. My personal feeling is the sooner we do things, the better. We may want to get a recommendation into the finance committees on the hardware side, just so everybody knows. But we may want to talk about if there's something that individually we could bring the members of the subcommittee up to speed on, the history, what the options are, what's possible. We could set up something to allow the staff to help with that, either privately or as a group. So I'm open to whatever. The key function of this group is to make sure that everybody feels that the ground rules are the same. We're all starting out in the same place, and then turn it over to the caucuses to do whatever they're going to do next. So I think the anticipation would be is some hardware would be bought over the summer for the caucuses. Is that likely?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe the fall, and again, Mr. Miller may have some ideas. There's no particular point in buying something soon.
Because there's nothing to do yet.
Because there's nothing to do yet. And the hardware is getting more powerful and less expensive as each month rolls by.
How
long can we wait before making that decision? Because stuff needs to get set up.
But you do have the point that the data basically, when will the data show up at the to put into the system, the new census data? Because you may want some time before that where people can practice on old data or.
We will be getting the new geography sometime December 2010, January 2011. And we'll get the population counts, as I said, maybe in March sometime. And it is possible to practice, and we want to practice, because getting that new geography and then plugging in this other information into the database it's going to have to go very rapidly. And if you haven't done it before, if you haven't practiced doing that, you're not going to be ready in time.
So
it is possible to get some data and for the members of this subcommittee to work on, to play with the software.
So,
simulation.
So it just seems like it may be before the new legislature gets seated, this group may decide to make things available so that in that November-December range, somebody can start becoming ready. Or, I mean, we just need to think about that. Maybe we want to wait until after we know the results of the election. Maybe we don't want to wait until we know the results of the election, because at this stage, it's something that you want to provide everybody. So, but that's the type of thing to think about. What makes sense there? So, and my suggestion, having been involved in this over the last two decades, whatever we can do to bring people's tension levels down on the front end so they think it's fair is a plus. Because there's absolutely tension once you try to start drawing maps, because it's just, that's the way it is. So, anything else today that the staff needs? Okay, I think, Mr. Watson.
I just wanted to mention that it's really hard to get fully informed on this redistricting stuff, because you don't do it every day. And even if you did it 10 years ago, you forget. But
That
you people can get started now on learning what you need to know, it will be good. And there's just one heck of a lot of information available on the legislature's redistricting website. And for the most up-to-date, up-to-the-minute information on what's going on, NCSL has a redistricting listserv that you can sign up for. If you just Google redistricting listserv, you can get it, sign up, and there things going to come out. Like next Monday or Tuesday, we're going to find out about the census count. There's a discussion going on right now about plotters that raise some of the issues that Senator Gerlach was talking about. There's a discussion about software, particularly online software, that I initiated yesterday.
So, Mr. Watson, let me make this suggestion. Why don't you and Mr. Gehring put together a suggested reading list and websites that you might want to look at? And we'll just give it to the members, and they can choose to proceed. I offer to the House, Mr. Watson is viewed as a national expert in this area. He's been involved in, is this your fourth or fifth decade?
Fifth
decade. The Senate, we absolutely, if you or your staff want to visit with Mr. Watson, feel free. You should. I suggest you do. So, okay.